Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 4th, 2016. South Sudan government says its troops are trapped in Bentiu town.
It is observed that there is a regrouping of rebel forces around Bentiu town. They have besieged the town, they have blocked all the routes that lead into the town, and their intentions are not known.
And Sudan and South Sudan reach a new deal on oil, but the terms of the deal are unclear.
This agreement is establishing the long-term cooperation. It's deepening our desires and our willingness as the two nations that we want to be viable, live side by side.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government is claiming that the armed forces belonging to SPLM-IO have besieged Bentiu, the capital of the newly created Northern Leech State. Government spokesman Michael Makui says all roads around Bentiu are closed. But as Philip Thornalew reports for VOA from Juba, the SPLM in opposition deny any unusual movement of its troops in the area.
Minister Michael Makui told reporters after an extraordinary Council of Ministers meeting yesterday that SPLM in opposition forces are on the move toward Bentiu.
It is observed that there is a regrouping of rebel forces around Bentiu town. They have besieged the town, they have blocked all the routes that lead into the town, and their intentions are not known.
Makui says the opposition did not notify the government about their motives for relocating forces around Bentiu town.
If it is the establishment of cantonment areas, then cantonment areas are usually established in collaboration and in agreement with the parties concerned. You don't just go and choose a place and say, I will have my cantonment place here.
Makui says the government is monitoring the movement of the opposition troops. James Gadet, a spokesman for SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar, denies their forces are regrouping around Bentiu.
This is not true. They are in their base there around Bentiu, and they have been there for a very long time. Although the government and the SPLM-IO are still discussing the locations of cantonment, they have not yet agreed on specific locations for cantonment area, but the bases are there. And we also propose some of the bases to be our cantonment area, but this has yet to be agreed upon by the two parties.
Gadet says the opposition troops are under instruction to respect the permanent ceasefire. He says the government should not use the alleged closure of roads leading to Bentiu as a pretext to attack rebel bases. The ceasefire and transitional security arrangement monitoring mechanism, which is supposed to monitor violations of the permanent ceasefire, declined to comment on the alleged military activity in Bentiu, but released a statement saying it is investigating separate clashes in Yambio and other parts of former Western Equatorial State. UNMISS spokesperson did not confirm or deny presence of rebel troops around Bentiu town. There have been no attacks on the main towns in the greater Upper Nile region since the peace agreement was signed 5 months ago. Fighting had been fierce in the region at the height of the conflict. For VOA News, I am Philip Thornalew in Juba.
Civil society groups in South Sudan welcome what they call a quick decision by the government and armed opposition to accept IGAD's communique, which urges the two warring parties to quickly form a transitional government of national unity. Civil society groups say the two parties should remain true to their word and fully implement the peace deal. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Juba.
Rajab Mohandes, executive director of the South Sudan Network for Democracy and Elections, read a statement on behalf of the civil society groups yesterday in Juba, commending both sides for agreeing to implement the recommendations of the IGAD communique.
We are also encouraged very much by the decision of the parties to adopt the communique of IGAD Council of Ministers as it is, and to commit themselves to form the transitional government of national unity with immediate effect. This is very encouraging news to us as the civil society and to the suffering masses across the country, those who have no roofs over their heads, those who have nothing to eat, and those who are hiding in the bushes or staying in displaced camps. This news goes to them.
He says the civil society strongly emphasizes the needs for the parties to remain true to their commitment and speed up the implementation process. Mohandi says the two parties must avoid altering the contents of the agreement so that timeliness are adhered to. Mohandi says the groups also commend IGAD and the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission for working hard to find a lasting solution to South Sudan's two-year-old conflict.
We applaud IGAD for remaining committed to see that peace prevails in our country. And we also appreciate the efforts of JEMEC for working very hard with the parties.
He calls on South Sudanese political forces to separate their partisan interests from legal aspects of the agreement and matters pertaining to the constitution. Mohandi says implementing the agreement requires a collective effort.
So I just want to call on the civil society, fraternity, and also the citizens generally to be able to discuss and share with us also what happens in their localities about the implementation of this agreement, so that we're able to follow up with the relevant authorities. It's our collective responsibility.
He says South Sudan's economic situation is already grim and requires commitment of the national leadership to climb out of the current economic crisis. Mohandis urged the government and armed opposition and all its stakeholders to ensure peace and stability, to reinforce necessary efforts towards realization of peace and stability in South Sudan. The government and a representative of the SPLM in opposition have been stuck for weeks on the implementation of the peace agreement. The rebels accused President Salva Kiir of violating the peace deal by creating 28 states. The government says it is ready to address any concerns about President Kiir's 28 states. Gift Friday for VOA News, Juba.
Oil ministers of Sudan and South Sudan say they have agreed to reduce the charges Juba pays Khartoum for using its pipeline and refinery equipment. The deal was announced during a visit by Sudan's oil minister to Juba yesterday. VOA fellow Justin Tito has this report.
The two ministers agreed that instead of paying cars for the use of Sudanese oil facilities and transit of oil through its territory, Juba will pay Khartoum in form of crude oil. South Sudan Petroleum and Mining Minister Stephen Dell says the crude oil purchase and sales agreement is long overdue.
We will be selling to Sudan agreed quantity of crude for the operations of Coast Power Plant, and also will sell agreed quantity of crude from Dar, from Block 3 and 7 to the Republic of Sudan for the refinery, Khartoum refinery. This is to meet their domestic needs.
Deal says a technical committee comprised of South Sudanese and Sudanese officials is discussing the details of the text. He says licensed officials from both countries will implement the agreement. Right now, Juba pays Khartoum $24.5 per barrel for oil transit fees and use of Sudanese oil pipelines and a refinery as agreed to in 2012, a year after South Sudan became independent. In speaking in Arabic, Sudan Oil Minister Awad Ahmad Al-Zaz says the deal opens a new chapter of economic cooperation between the two countries. Awad says we have signed the sale and purchase agreement, which is satisfactory to both countries. The principle that is agreed upon here is the revising of the transit fee, but the mechanism by which we are going to do this is still under discussion. He assured everyone that Sudan and South Sudan agree on 90% of the terms of the agreement. Al-Jaz also says they have agreed that the new transit fee will be dependent on oil prices on the global market. Deal says, given the recent decline in crude oil prices, the two countries are reviewing the cooperation agreement to reduce the tariffs Juba pays Khartoum. Deal says the deal represents a giant step toward mutual economic benefits for both countries.
This agreement is establishing the long-term cooperation. It's deepening our desires and our willingness as the two nations that we want to be viable, live side by side. We are hopeful from now with this period, as South Sudan is implementing the peace agreement, and we hope also the peace agreement will also take place in Sudan, and the two countries, two states, will just focus on development and delivery of services to their people.
A local analyst told South Sudan in Focus last week that the worsening economic situation in both countries is forcing President Salva Kiir and his Sudanese counterpart, Omar al-Bashir, to reconsider their diplomatic relations. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
That report was prepared by Philip Thornaleu in Juba. South Sudan's Urban Water Corporation is building a 180,000 cubic liter water distribution plant. The agency says it plans to distribute water to more than 400,000 residents in Juba. Officials believe the new Japanese-funded plant will help prevent the spread of waterborne diseases, which have been rampant in Juba in recent months. Mungume Debs Ruakarinj files this report from Juba.
The $50 million-plus project is funded by the Japanese International Cooperation Agency, or JICA. Speaking at the project's launch yesterday, site engineer Lawrence Lopula Murudyang said they are constructing a water reservoir at the Parliament building, which will distribute water to additional parts of Juba.
There's a line going to Munuki, Budere. There's another one going to Mauna Custom Market. There's another one going through Kator, Lologo. The means of distribution is using tanker truck stations so that we can stop tanker trucks from getting river water to your household. 8 of them dotted in the 3 payams making Juba City. And then there are 120 public water kiosks.
Lopla says it's not clear exactly how much the project will cost, but the Japanese International Cooperation Agency is paying for it.
The Japanese government started by funding the Juba Water Supply Master Plan. I think it was over $2 million. And then we went to the Japanese Grant Aid Project, which is this current project under construction, which is $48 million. The capacity development component is about between $5 and $6 million.
Lopula says the South Sudan Water Corporation will also provide piped water to thousands of additional subscribing households and offices. He says that means most Juba residents will have access to clean, affordable water.
This will help in preventing the cholera outbreaks that break out every year. The local people will now have public water points near their house and stop the women from having long distance to queue and buy water, and children to go and fetch water from faraway places, and they can go to school.
Lopula says right now, only about 30% of the population in Juba receives clean water. He says most of the water pipes in Juba, which were constructed in the early 1950s, are worn out and have many leaks. Hirotaka Sato, JICA's chief advisor for the project, says his agency will train some local personnel on how to run the water project.
We train about leakage survey technology. Then we train the staff how to use such equipment. We train how to fix the service connection, how to repair the service connection.
Madol Chutchep, Deputy Managing Director for the Urban Water Corporation, believes training of local personnel will ensure the sustainability of the water supply project.
They will be trained of how to monitor the water actually through the pipe, so that they can know whether there is a leakage, there is damage. There is something that there is a leakage that you can see when the water bursts out. You can see, but there is small thing inside. You cannot see. And when there is a leakage, that is mean that the thing can get into the water and they can just go along.
Juba resident Lesuk Emmanuel Alson welcomes the initiative.
Sometimes you find that the tanks of water, they cannot fix some other areas in time, and you find that other people cannot afford the money to buy. Like the drum of water is now £25 in area in Nyokrand here. But when going to Gurei site, it is around £30, which is very hot.
Alson says sometimes he fails to eat because he does not have water to cook food. The project is expected to be completed in September of next year. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, UN says many African countries are not respecting the rights of children. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you wrote a story of your life, how would it begin?
This is my story. Through my life, I've been through ups and downs.
I will begin from my childhood, how I was a child, and then how I progressed to become an adult, and especially during my school times. There are so many things I can recall.
I think I would begin with the words like, God is good, because I've achieved in life, because God made me to achieve.
Humble. My beginning has been humble, and to be where I am today is just a grace of God.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A UN watchdog committee says many African countries are not living up to their obligation under the 1990 Convention of the Rights of the Child. It says harmful cultural traditions as well as other forms of human rights abuses continue to be widely practiced throughout Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Committee on the Rights of the Child, which monitors implementation of the convention, has just completed its latest three-week session in Geneva. The 18 independent experts have examined the records of 14 states, including five African countries: Benin, Kenya, Senegal, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The committee found harmful practices such as female genital mutilation and child marriage are still being practiced in the countries examined, and in the case of Kenya, the experts expressed concern about beating of girls, a form of sexual enslavement within families that often leads to rape. The independent experts condemned the killings and trafficking of albino children for body parts in Kenya, some of which is committed by the family members. But the experts note this horrific practice goes on in 16 African countries. Committee Chair Benya Mesmore tells VOA, albinism often is linked to political elections because it is thought the body parts of children with this condition bring good luck.
For instance, during the elections in Kenya, there have been incidents where some of the countries in the region, the number of attacks have actually gone up. The instances of local elections, national elections in a neighboring country have had a negative impact on the rise of attacks and the rise of killings in another neighboring country.
Ms. Moore says attacks against albinos are not an issue that can be addressed by one country. He says it requires a coordinated response. The committee singled out an initiation ceremony in the West African country of Benin for a particular rebuke. Mesmer says children, especially girls, are taken away from their families and sequestered in so-called voodoo convents.
In these instances, their access to education, their access to contact with their family, their access to health care and so forth is almost close to non-existent. Sadly, there are instances of ill treatment, but also sexual abuse that actually goes on in these convents.
The committee is calling on the government of Benin to remove children from voodoo convents and provide psychological, social, and financial assistance to help them recover from their traumatizing experiences. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Turning now to Cameroon, where human rights groups are calling on the government to improve the conditions of its poor and chronically overcrowded prisons. Rights advocates say poor sanitation, inadequate food and water, and torture are rife in prisons. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yoko in central Cameroon.
26-year-old Penda Emmanuel has been jailed in Cameroon's Yoko prison for 4 years. He says he was handed a 7-year jail sentence for aggravated theft and attempted murder and was detained in a prison in Yaoundé for 2 years before transfer to the Yoko prison.
No, it's not good because in Yoko, first of all, there is no food. People are living but we're hunting, all those type of things. That means if you are in prison of Yoko, you will suffer too much.
Pem Clement has been serving a life sentence for murder. He says lack of food and drinkable water, torture and inhumane treatment provoked a prison break when he was brought to the Yoko prison less than 10 years ago.
Les prisonniers avaient été évadés de cette prison et on avait envoyé les corps armés de
Yaoundé. He says the government called for troops from the capital Yaoundé before a reign of terror and massacres was reduced. He says people were asked not to go out after 6 p.m. when helicopters flew above to shoot at prisoners who were hiding in the bushes and had been raping women. He says many of them were killed and he does not know how many could have escaped. Cameroon's 78 prisons are built for a maximum capacity of 16,000 inmates. They now host 30,000 people, with a majority of them still awaiting trial. Some of the prisons, like the Kondenge prison in Yaoundé, were constructed to hold only 500 inmates. Today, it holds more than 2,000 inmates. Chemuta Divine, chairperson of Cameroon's National Commission on Human Rights and Freedoms, says the group is calling on the government to respect the rights of the prisoners by meeting their basic needs and giving them access to a fair trial.
You cannot be denying what is commonly known and where evidence is available. You rather accept that violations are going on and try to find the root cause and see how you can eradicate to ensure that that is not happening again.
Yoko Prison Registrar Mipui David says there have been efforts to improve conditions at the facility. He says the prison population has fallen from 3,000 inmates 2 years ago to less than 100 today.
La prison de Yoko se porte bien pour le moment. Et puis l'État fait.
He says the government has done a lot to improve living conditions in his prison, but they face an acute water shortage. David refutes allegations his prison has swelled from the arrest and detention of suspected Boko Haram terrorists who have been attacking northern Cameroon, Nigeria and Chad in an effort to create an Islamist state. Amnesty International reported in September that prisons in Cameroon were receiving a large number of Boko Haram suspects. It said the Marwa prison, near Cameroon's border with Nigeria, constructed for less than 500 inmates, was nearly half filled with Boko Haram suspects, and its 1,300 prisoners were housed without proper hygiene and health care. Cameroon has denied the accusations. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News in Yoko, Cameroon.
An acclaimed Nigerian actress and dancer is inspiring growing number of people in South Africa to get up and boogie. Vera Ephraim is also an award-winning choreographer, having collaborated with a host of celebrated African musicians, including South Africa's Hik Masakela and Nigeria's Swami Kuti. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
A lithe woman in a turquoise vest and wide patterned pants shouts instructions inside a studio in Johannesburg. Her thick black curls glisten with sweat as she explains how she began her unique mission here about a year ago.
I had a lot of encouragement from a group of friends who said, Vera, you know, can you start a dance class? I really want to know what Western African dance looks like, what it sounds like, what it feels like, how is it different from Southern African movement?
Vera Ephraim has university diplomas in performance art from Britain, has danced in productions across Europe, and acted in some of South Africa's top TV shows. Now, though, she's busy with what she describes as her greatest challenge yet, teaching complete novices the art of traditional West African dancing. Ephraim says West African dancers are very fast and driven by the djembe drum.
In West Africa, we use a lot of djembe drumming. The rhythm is different also, of course, because djembe produces up to 4 or 5 rhythms on its own.
One of her eager pupils is Renske van den Hoff, a social policy analyst from the Netherlands. She says the djembe frees her and makes her feel part of the continent.
The drums obviously help to feel more an African feeling, get a more African vibe to it, yeah.
Ephraim says West African dancers use a lot of hip movement and dance with their whole bodies. In what Ephraim calls a harvesting dance, her students hurl their bodies forward while their arms scrape the floor.
If you're harvesting, your arms are plucking the apples or your arms are digging out the yam from the soil.
She also fuses more modern African music with djembe drums to spice things up for her students, she says. Ephraim explains that the dances she teaches have storylines.
This dance is from Ghana, it's for marriage. And this movement here signifies that the girl has been shy, the shaking the shoulder. And then this is the guy posing like, I see you, I'm coming over.
Her dancers are a diverse bunch, from domestic workers to rich businessmen, to Emi Kawamura, an administrator for a Japanese car company.
Even if we are just a beginner, even if we don't know the technique, we can always enjoy.
Ephraim's present classes have been filled up by a group of expatriate professionals. Procurement manager Laura Del Castillo from Spain says West African dancing is fun and challenging.
It's a great experience just listening to music, not thinking about anything else but concentrating on what step you have to do next and just laughing about yourself and how wrong you're doing it. So.
Alejandro Campiero, an economist from Mexico, says she's learning West African dance purely because of Ephraim's dynamism.
She's always full of good energy and has this power that not everybody can. She gets everybody into the mood, and that's so nice.
Ephraim says nothing gives her more satisfaction than watching her students grow and connect with West African movements and stories here in the heart of South Africa. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Rukundo by Kidum.
Nimbari kuno kunumbona Nabonyuru kundari maindadu Nabonyaru kundo Nakundu morondo Nabwembangi sese Sinamubu hinda nubu menyini tangisikanwa Temera kubikimati chukundo Temeru rufugu kwa banu Kwemera siru kwisera murukundo mfukani
Murukundo zatuweru ngele
Murukundo urukundo
Zatumera ushikira manjiko kwifu mabazi
Murukundo
zatuweru ngele
Warukundo, warukundo kukutizo
Zatumera ushikira manjiko kwifu mabazi Mamera bana nikera mye
Kirato, kigahengama, wima, wisonze, shikui kumukanda Bukori joro numurango, bukingiri nyungu sumuryango Bukui kirenge undi na we, otema nereke Hafugu wabubezwe, imba numubabaro Ndajibu kake urukundo rugiso satu kivuga tiki
Urukundo
bisotubera
bisotubera ushikira manje no kwifuma basi
Urukundo
bisotubera
warukundo ngo kutiso yo yo yo
bisotubera ushikira manje no kwifuma basi Nonera bara ni karamye
Nonera bara ni karamye
Yabonye bafisa mafaranga
We have been listening to Kidum with the song Urukundo, which means love in Kinyarwanda. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. I must admit I love doing this show. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.